want to thank Ed for that passage that he read this morning in Genesis, and we'll get there pretty soon. I want to start with an experience that I shared a few months ago that kind of led me to the topic that I want to spend some time on this morning. A few months ago, me and Angela were in our kitchen, and we were talking about how we needed to probably make a better effort to pick things up around the house. When we made a mess, we needed to make a better effort of cleaning up after ourselves. And in typical married couple fashion, we both thought the other one needed to work on that a little more than the other. So we both had some tips for each other that we thought, well, you know, if you do this, I think it'll be better. And Angela had some tips for me. A little background on me. Most of you have not been around me much, but I am very unorganized, and I'm very good at making messes. So I probably needed a lot more of those tips. But one of the things that we were talking about, I was trying to tell Angela, you know, if you do this, it'll be so much easier for you in regards to loading the dishwasher. Instead of taking the dishes and putting them in the sink and then later putting them in the dishwasher, if you just want them straight into the dishwasher, it's just going to be so much more efficient, and it's going to help you out. And we had this conversation about how we both needed to clean up and do these things. And I believe it was the following morning after we had this conversation. I went downstairs first and in the kitchen, and there I saw these dishes in the sink instead of the dishwasher. And I started to develop some feelings of anger and disappointment. I thought, well, we just talked about this, right? We just had this conversation. I just told you this would help you out. And I started to go down a certain road in my mind. And about that time, Angela walked in. And as she walked through the living room, she picked up a bowl. And she looked at me and she said, "Is this your bowl of snacks from last night?" And right then, at that moment, I had a very humbling experience. And I'm thankful for that experience. It was not enjoyable. But I am thankful for that experience. You see, I had started to head down a terrible road that I think most of us do, and that is the road of blame. I had started blaming someone for something, putting that guilt on them and not on myself. And since then, I've kind of noticed, and I guess my eyes were open. That was a good humbling experience. Again, I didn't enjoy that. I don't think anyone likes to be humbled, but it is good to be humbled. It is good to have those experiences. But I started to kind of look in and around the world and in our society, and I started to see how prevalent blaming is. It's all around us. Everyone seems to be partaking in this. I'm guessing that we all probably on some level blame someone or something in our lives on some sort of basis. The finger pointing, the blame game. And I want to take a moment, just a short moment, to point out there is a difference between blaming someone for something and making acknowledgement of if you see someone do something that they are guilty, and I'll give you an example. So if I leave today and I back up and I back into Bill's vehicle and I leave and Bill would say, "Well, who backed into Bill's vehicle?" And Ed would say, "Well, Drew backed into your vehicle." That's not blaming. That's Ed pointing out a fact of something I did, and that is needed in our lives. Sometimes we have to point out factual events. When someone does something wrong, we have to point those things out. That's not the blaming I'm talking about. I'll give you some examples of what I'm referring to. Have you ever been running late? Maybe you're running late at home and you're trying to get to a certain destination. So then you get in your vehicle and you get behind a vehicle that's just driving way too slow in your estimation. Well, what kind of feeling does that make you have? Is it the person driving slow? Is it their fault that you're late? What is your opinion towards that person that's driving slow? Remember, you are the one that was running late. You are the one that had made decisions in your routine to put you in this position. But when you get behind this vehicle that is going slower than you'd like, whose fault is it that you're late? When you get to your destination, what do you tell the people that you're going to see, you're going to be around? Do you say, well, I got behind somebody who was going so slow, and that's the reason I'm late. Is that your attitude? Is that what you say? Or do you say, you know what, I was running late, and I did not plan accordingly, and I just didn't plan my timing right, and that's my fault. How about when you misplace an item? I'm really guilty of this. This is kind of funny how this works, but if you misplace an item around your house, who do you look to? Do you immediately blame your family members? Well, they must have done something with it. I know I had this item here, and now it's gone. Someone must have taken this item and put it somewhere else. When I'm on a job site by myself, I spend more time looking for my tools that I misplaced than anything else. But if someone's working with me and I misplace a tool, thinking, well, I wonder if they took my tool. I wonder if they took my tool and put it somewhere where I can't find it. Would you blame a teacher for a difficult test? I can remember this as I never was a great student. I didn't like tests, and I didn't ever study for tests, and that's usually a correlation of not liking tests. But I can remember taking tests and thinking, who does this teacher think they are? How are we expected to know the answers to this test? How could this even be that we're supposed to know this? Do you blame a teacher for a difficult test? When you make a mistake at work, do you blame your employer? Do you blame the process? Well, the reason why I did that is because of such and such and such and such. I wouldn't have done that, but because of these things, that's the reason why I do that. What is your attitude when you make a mistake? Do you blame your spouse for disagreements? Do you blame, in any situation, any kind of disagreement with a relationship, whether it be your neighbor, a loved one, a brother, a sister, a parent? Who do you put that blame on? Do you say, you know what, I did some things wrong in that situation? Or do you say, you know, it's their fault that we had this conversation. It's their fault that we're disagreeing. And that list can go on. And I think you probably get the idea of where I'm going. This road of blame is it's a terrible, nasty road. The problem with the blame game, the problem with going down this road is you pile up all the guilt and flaws on someone else. That's essentially why I think we do it. We want that guilt and we want that blame on us. But when you do that, you distract yourself from the difficult task of self-reflection. And I think that is a major problem. When we shift that blame, when we put that blame on someone else, we distract ourselves from looking inwardly and saying, you know what, I maybe need to make some adjustments there. I need to work on those things. It doesn't seem like it's very often that we witness someone taking the blame for something they did wrong. To me, at least when I look out in the world, I don't feel like I see that a lot. I do see it sometimes. But there seems to always be a reason or an excuse for a wrongdoing or a sin or a miscue. We see this in the world of sports. All too often the reason for defeat is because, well, the other side cheated, something was wrong with the field, something was wrong with the equipment, well, we lost because of the umpire or the referee. Very rarely do you see a team go, you know, we lost because we just weren't good enough. It does happen sometimes, and I'm refreshed when I hear that, when a team just says, hey, we weren't good enough. That's why we didn't win. How about in politics? This is all too fresh in our minds. You have one side and another side, and they're continually pointing at each other saying, well, this is the reason why this isn't happening. It's a continual battle in politics. Well, we can't get anything done because of this side. And the other side says, well, they don't want to do anything because of this. Here recently, I watched part of the Supreme Court justice hearing, and one of the individuals that was running it stood up and said, you know what, there is a big rift between these two groups, and I think we're both to blame. I don't know that anything will come of that, but it was nice and it was refreshing for him to admit that we are both to blame. We are both at fault. I want to spend some time this morning, the next few minutes that we have, talking about blame and talking about how terrible of a road that is to go down. As we mentioned, blaming others keeps you from being self-reflective. Blaming others keeps you from constructive benefits. I don't think we really enjoy being self-reflective sometimes, as we look inwardly and we find things we don't like. But it is very important. It is very valuable, especially as a Christian, to look inwardly, to see where your flaws are, to see where you need to make adjustments, to see where you need to pattern yourself after Christ. When we blame, it keeps us from being humble. And then you heap up all the wrongdoing on someone else. There are two areas of blame that I would like to touch on this morning, and that is blaming others and then blaming God. We don't have to get too far into the Bible to see how we as humans seem to have a natural inclination of blaming others. As Ed read for us, we'll just take a minute to look at that. In Genesis, the first chapter, God confronts Adam and Eve after they have ate of the fruit that they were told not to. What was the response of Adam and Eve? What was their response? This is what God says to them. Have you eaten of the tree which I commanded you not to eat? Man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me fruit of the tree, and I ate. And the Lord God said to the woman, what is this that you have done? The woman said, the serpent deceived me, and I ate. Well, let's look at Adam's statement. Was Adam's statement true? Did Eve give Adam the fruit? Did God give Eve to Adam? Well, those are both true statements, right? Was Adam telling the truth there? Eve did give Adam the fruit, and God did give Eve to Adam. So who is at fault for Adam eating that fruit? Who's at fault? And I heard Adam. Adam is at fault for that. God did give Adam Eve, and God did put fruit in the garden. God made the serpent. God made these rules. But it was still Adam's fault. You see how inclined we are to push the blame of our own mistakes on someone else. I don't know the full intent of Adam's heart. This is just a reading that we have. I don't know exactly what was going on through his mind. Maybe his intent was not to cast blame on someone else, but that seems apparently what he has done. I think the correct answer in that, when God said, Adam, did you eat of this fruit? I think the correct answer for Adam would have been, yes, I did. I messed up. Admitting failure and facing consequences is no enjoyable task, and I think that's why we try to do it. We don't like to be in trouble. We don't like to be on the spot. We want to avoid those situations, so we try to shift that blame on someone else so it doesn't look like we are as guilty as we are. I see this in my children all the time. When I ask of something that maybe something was broke or someone did something, and I ask, well, who did this? They are very quick to point to the other one. They want to blame. They don't want to be in trouble. And I think we are so much like that. We like to make others look guilty so we don't have to take the brunt of that punishment. Eve appears to have a little bit better answer to God than Adam. But still, Eve cast her blame on the serpent. At least she did take some responsibility, stating that she was deceived. But she did say it was a serpent who deceived me. It was the serpent. Was that a true statement? Well, again, I believe so. That was a true statement. She was deceived by the serpent. But does that remove the guilt from me? If someone does something that they are not supposed to, and then they are confronted, a quick response usually is, well, they made me do it. I can remember as a child, I would say this when my father would ask me, well, why did you do this? Well, so-and-so made me do it. And that logic just doesn't go very far. I don't know that we can really make anyone do anything. We definitely have an ability to influence people and to deceive people and to help them make that decision, but I don't know that we can really make anyone do anything. Again, I don't know the heart of Adam and Eve when they responded to God, but I think we can all learn from this event and see how so often we react in the same way. We try to take some of that guilt and shame, and we try to put it on someone else so we don't look so bad. One of the ways that I have seen people blame God is they blame God for the way that they are. And this is a major problem in my estimation. I'll give you an example of this. I have been around several men who have kind of said this. In regards to men looking at other women with a lustful eye or with a sexual desire, and if you make a comment to them, they'll say, well, that's just how I am. That's just how God made me. Again, there is a natural inclination for men to be attracted to women. And that's what I've heard men say. Well, that's just how I am. That's just how God made me. How would that go over with your friends and your family and your coworkers and your neighbors? Maybe we are selfish. Maybe we are greedy. Maybe we have a bad temper. Maybe we have a problem with gossiping about other people. Maybe we are lazy. Is this a response that we can use to people? Well, that's just how I am. Can you use that response to your employer when you show up? Well, I'm just lazy. That's just how I am. That's just how God made me. And you're going to have to deal with it. What if Angela would have come downstairs when she presented that empty bowl of snacks that I left out the night before, and she said, is this your empty bowl? And I said, well, that's just how God made me. I'm just not a person that puts stuff back. And you got to deal with it. That's just how I am. How does that logic work? It doesn't work very well, does it? You can see how silly that line of thinking is, but it is a blame game. We're trying to blame someone for actions that come from us. Another area of our life that we have to be careful about casting blame is the situation in life that we find ourselves in. And I can elaborate on this. There are times that we find ourselves in situations in life that we have absolute no control over. There are things that we can control and we end up in those situations. But there are other things that can happen in our life, unfortunate events that we have absolutely no control over. And sometimes we seek answers for that. I graduated with a girl, and I don't have much correspondence with her, but I see some of the things that happens in her life in Facebook. She has a child, I believe, around the 5 or 6 year old mark. And that child has been battling cancer for about a year and a half. And it looks like just a terrible situation to deal with. They've essentially lived in a hospital for that long. It's just a terrible situation. And we can find ourselves in similar situations like that. Maybe it's a health issue. Maybe you deal with something that's constantly nagging you, whether it's a disease or it's chronic pain or some kind of physical pain. Maybe you have a loved one that is dealing with a sickness, some kind of terminal illness, something that can be very troubling. Maybe you feel like you can't catch a break. Maybe you're in one of these situations or you've been in one of these situations and you feel like you can't catch a break. Maybe you're dealing with mental obstacles. I know of people who deal with anxiety. It's something that feels like they can't quite conquer. It's always coming back. It's always giving them problems. And in these situations, oftentimes, there really are no great answers that we can give ourselves in this situation. And I think one temptation that we have in that situation is to blame God. God, why am I in this situation? Why am I having to deal with this? In these type of situations, we're trying to cast guilt on someone else, but instead we want someone to take ownership of why we are struggling. We would really like an answer. We can look at the life of Job. We can see quickly in his life he had a lot of great things early on, and then he had all those trials come to him, or he lost his family, he lost his possessions, he lost his own health. It was just a terrible situation that he was in. I think if you find yourself in a situation that causes so much grief and sorrow, you might naturally wonder, well, why am I in this situation? Why is this happening to me? Whose fault is it that I am suffering so much? Job had his wife and his friends weigh in on his situation when he was dealing with this. His wife encouraged him, just curse God and die. Just curse God and just be done with it. And his friends were adamant that he must have done something wrong. You know, this is something you must have brought on yourself. And this was the result of it. So in those situations that we deal with, we may look to blame someone for our own hardships, things that we deal with, things that we can't understand why we're going through those things. And I think one of the easiest people to blame in those situations is God. We understand that God can make all pain go away. If we believe in God, we believe that God is the person He says He is, we understand that He can make all that go away. All our suffering, all our hardships go away. We know that He is in control of the whole universe. And we might want to cast blame on God. Think, you know what, God, why are you allowing this to happen to me? Why are you allowing me to be in this position? God, why did you make me like this? Why won't you make this go away? And when we don't have answers to those questions, we can build up a resentment and anger. And that puts us in a really bad situation. Situations like Job's are really hard for me to wrap my mind around. Even that girl I graduated, went to school with, to see her family go through that, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around. That's a terrible situation that they're in. Was there someone to blame for the troubles that Job went through? Was it Satan's fault? Can we put that blame on Satan for inflicting the pain and suffering that Job went through? Was it God's fault for allowing it to happen? Was it Job's fault? You know, if Job wasn't a righteous man, maybe this wouldn't have happened to him at all. So maybe it was Job's fault. Whose fault is it? And we have a lot of questions that can be very complex to answer. I think in our mind, in these situations, we would really like to pin the blame on someone else. I think that would make us feel better in some level and subconsciously. We would like to look it in the eye and say, this is your fault. You are to blame. Well, what does that do for us? What does that really accomplish? When you blame others or God, what does it do for you? Does the problem go away? I think we saw this quite a bit when COVID hit. There still seems to be a lot of blaming on whose fault some of these deaths are, where it came from. Does it change it that it's here? If we could really point it and say, you know what, this was so-and-so's fault, or this was this person's fault. Does it change the fact that it's still here? No, it's still here. When you blame others, does it free yourself from wrongdoing? Does it better your situation when you blame others? I think the problem, one of the problems with blaming is that we cast and we paint a false narrative in our mind. We somehow try to remove the guilt and the weight of sin from ourselves and put it on someone else. We try to make ourselves appear better than others. And when we blame God, we fill ourselves with pride and we are resistant to change. When we blame others, we give ourselves a false sense of innocence. When I was in eighth grade, I was on a basketball bus coming back from a basketball game, and I reached in my coat pocket, and I had a small book of matches there. One of my jobs as a kid was to burn the trash, and that was in my coat pocket, and some of my peers were around me, and they dared me to light a match on the bus. And like most kids that age, I quickly gave in, and I lit that match on the bus, and if you've ever been around a match, you know that that puts off a pretty distinct odor, and that went out through the bus very quickly. That caused a little bit of a commotion among the people. Where's the smell coming from? And everyone started to realize that something had happened. I knew that I was guilty. I knew that I had done it. I was the one to blame. I had a basketball coach that was a pretty intense individual, and he made it pretty clear that we were not getting off that bus until we found out who did it. While that was going on there for a moment, someone suggested that that smell may have came from outside of burning leaves. And there for a moment, I felt a false sense of innocence. I felt like I might just get away with this. Even though I knew I was the one who had done this, even though I was the one who committed this, I thought for a second, I'm going to get away with this. And I had a false sense of innocence. I didn't get away with that. I ended up confessing for that. And I had to pay a punishment for that. But I think that is what happens when we blame something on other people. We create a false narrative in our mind. We create a false sense of innocence. I think the biggest, very biggest problem with blaming others, though, is that we minimize the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. We are all guilty. Anyone can point at us and say, you are a sinner. And that would be a true statement. Anyone can point at us and say that, and I don't know how we would have any ability to deny that. Romans 3:23, we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We are to blame for our sin. 1 Peter 3:18, for Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. He was to put death in the body, but made life in the spirit. Romans the 5th chapter, starting in the 12th verse. Therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sinned. For sin indeed was in the world before the law was given. But sin is not counted where there is no law. Yet death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those whose sinning was not like the transgression of Adam, who was a type of the one who was to come. But the free gift is not like the trespass. For if many died through one man's trespass, much more have the grace of God, and the free gift by the grace of the one man, Jesus Christ, abounded for many. And the free gift is not like the result of that one man's sin. For the judgment following one trespass brought condemnation, but the free gift following many trespasses brought justification. For if, because of one man's trespass, death reigned through that one man, much more will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness reign in life through the one man, Jesus Christ. Therefore, as one trespass led to condemnation for all men, so one act of righteousness leads to justification and life for all men. For as by the one man's disobedience the many were made sinners, so by the one man's obedience the many will be made righteous. Now the law came in to increase the trespass, but where sin increased, grace abounded all the more, so that as sin reigned in death, grace also might reign through righteousness, leading to eternal life through Jesus Christ, our Lord. When Jesus was here on earth, he would have had a lot of opportunities to point a finger and blame people, and rightfully so. Because he was without sin. He was flawless. He made no mistakes. And he could have easily went through his daily routine pointing at people and blaming and pointing out their sins, their wickedness, their corruption. But that's not what Jesus did. Instead, when the finger was pointed on us, when condemnation was going to be rained down on us for our wickedness, for our sin, for our faults, for our failures, for our miscues, Jesus stood up and said, I'll take the blame. I will take the blame. This morning, Jesus is still standing and advocating for you. He is still boldly proclaiming that he will take the blame for your sins. We minimize the sacrifice of Jesus Christ when we try to push the guilt on someone else. We fail to look at ourselves. We fail to humble ourselves. We fail to be like Jesus Christ. This morning we'll close and we'll offer the gospel invitation. If you're looking inwardly and you know that you are full of sin and you're corrupt, and you need Jesus to stand up in your place, and you need Jesus to say, I'll take your blame, please come forward as we stand and sing the selected invitation song.